Welcome to the Food Professor Podcast, Year of the Fire Horse, episode. I'm Michael LeBlanc.
And I'm the Food Professor, Sylvain Charlebois.
We have a solo host-only episode for the people today. Lots to get through for us together. We'll be back with regular scheduled programming next week when our guest will be the one and only Robert Carter, president of the Coffee Association.
Coffee guy.
And a restaurant whisperer, a restaurant guru, restaurant That's consulting right. guru. So we'll talk about this a little later in the show.
It's about time we've had Robert on the show. We've known him for years.
Years. Like it is, it's one of those, I can't believe he hasn't been on the show yet kind of guests. So thrilled to have him on. We got so many great guests coming up. We're lining up guests for Seattle in person. We're going to be in Montreal together. So looking forward to that. Before that, I guess I'll see you at Restaurants Canada. You're on the stage.
It's coming up soon. Yeah, absolutely.
You're on stage a bunch of times. We'll go out to dinner and we'll have some fun, and that'll be great. So, Year of the Fire Horse, Gan Si Fat Sai, Sylvain. I'm a rabbit in the Chinese astrology, Rasky Rabbit or Bad Bunny, I guess.
That's right.
We could say, what are you? You're a dog.
I'm a dog.
You're a dog. Now, a rabbit apparently is gentle, quiet, elegant. So, I don't fit that mode. very patient. And very responsible.
You're responsible.
I'm responsible. We get a show out every week. So there you go.
Exactly.
But there we go. Celebrating tonight, I'm holding up. I'm having spicy Szechuan pork noodles I'm making today.
Here's the recipe book. Smell it from here.
Right there. It is from one of my new favorite recipe tin, Maggi Mahashi. And she's got a great cookbook, a great series of cookbooks, and they're fast and easy. So I'll be using some Dubreton pork in my... in my noodles, by the way, Vince.
Labeled Dubreton pork, telling you that it is not cloned, telling you it's not gene edited either.
Vince just got an email from Vince. He will be our, we're thrilled. He's going to be our guest back on the show. It's been a couple of years. We're going to interview him live in person at Seattle.
He's been active.
So now let's get on to the news. So let's start with inflation. So it came as no surprise to either of us or anyone who's been listening that the inflation numbers were just huge. And you did some great work that kind of netted out the effect of the GST holiday. It's still, from your analysis, we're leading the G7 in terms of food inflation. It's stubborn in terms of not being able to crack the headlines. Like the headlines in the newspaper that I've seen are all, hey, inflation not bad, 2.6%. Oh, by the way, you know, food inflation. Oh my God, food inflation, what was it, 7-point-something% netted out to 6-point-something% over years of food inflation. Now, you know, there's just a lot of very stuck, you know, when I watched some of the media that was talking about it, people are blaming Ukraine or even ridiculously people for eating too much meat or some nonsense like that. Your view, your perspective, and if you could share it with everyone here so we're crystal clear, is it a series of consecutive policy decisions and frameworks have led to us having, and plus some diseconomy of scale in Canada, our inability to absorb in our framework price increases have led to this point. What's going to get us off the cliff, Sylvain?
Yeah, so I've been dealing with media for like more than 25 years. And honestly, I think something changed like in 2021, 2022. You can feel that media is extremely careful when dealing with highly politicized issues, and one of them now is food inflation. I mean, it's top of mind. Parliamentarians actually mention all the time in the House of Commons. By the way, my name since the last election in Parliament, my name was mentioned. Guess what? 29 times.
Wow.
Since April 2025. 7 times by the Liberals, 22 times by the Conservatives. So it's absolutely out there. People are talking about it. But the reality, and of course, I don't want to minimize the issue of climate change and consumer demand. These factors do influence prices, but they don't actually bring food inflation up to 7.3%.
Well, my point in that when I hear that is like, yeah, that's not a Canadian phenomenon, the two things you just mentioned. No. So why are we so far?
Exactly, the U.S.
Why are we so far ahead of the U.S., who's got its own problems with tariffs and counter tariffs? And, you know, they've got the same challenges with beef pricing, for example. My friends in the Texas barbecue scene are really struggling. So it's not like, you know, these things are isolated to Canada that are driving our inflation. Something Absolutely. Else must be going on.
I mean, in the U.S., they actually collected well over $300 billion worth of tariffs with food coming in or products coming into the U.S., and their food inflation is actually dropping with a tariff-happy president.
Now, some of that is scale, right? They just have such a massive scale, right? That
Absolutely. They can absorb, they have companies. They can pivot. They don't single source. They have many options. And that's why they're able to control their food inflation as much as they can. So if this is not a wake-up call for Canadians, I don't know what is. We're at 7.3%. Now, There was a lot of talk about the GST holiday minimizing 7.3%, but if you take out if you take out the GST holiday effect, you're looking at a food inflation rate of about 6.2-6.3%, which would still make Canada the number one country amongst G7 countries. And the next country is Japan at 5.1. So you can see that something is fundamentally wrong here.
Well, I've been reading looking at the latest polls, and the Liberals seem to be, and got another floor crosser today. So they're one or two seats close to a majority. Yep. But they seem to be putting a bit of a spread between popularity between themselves and Poilievre and the Conservatives. Yet they are really not doing much in, you know, they're making big announcements, great, on defense.
They're sending out checks.
They're doing a bunch of, they're doing a bunch of things that they promised to do. But one thing after, what is it now, a year, where they haven't passed, actually, they haven't still passed the budget yet, is they're not really tackling the affordability crisis. So I'm a little baffled at why that's not a little.
I mean, the thing, I mean, Ottawa has to do its part, but provinces also have to work on similar issues. Like interprovincial trade barriers, to me, that was, when I looked at the data yesterday, it became really obvious. I mean, you're looking at some Atlantic provinces with a food inflation rate of over 9%.
Wow.
Okay. So in Ontario, it's at around, I believe, 5.4%. So it's not too bad. But you can see that scalability is a big problem, and remote areas are really penalized right now. And people may think, well, barriers have been around forever, so why now? Well, as soon as you have disruptions, these obstacles or barriers become even more obvious. That's the thing. And geopolitically, we've had to pivot. I mean, for example, think of the Maritimes, the Atlantic. If all of a sudden you can't buy food from the U.S., you have to go elsewhere. But if you're a small buyer, you're going to have to pay more. But if you're in Quebec and Ontario, you can actually get away with a lot. And that's why some of the data in Ontario is still bad. It's still bad where you are and for Quebec. But in the Atlantic, it's much, much worse. So barriers are a problem. The industrial carbon tax, which is coming, which is actually increasing on April 1st to $110 a metric ton, that's still there. And those are those are transactional costs, the bureaucracy, supply management, of course, and I don't want to go into that because it's complicated, but supply management is costing people money because quotas are managed by provinces, and of course, poor logistics, which is really making things hard to move food around. So, I mean, I was actually very grateful for some shows to allow me to explain some of the issues, but a lot of them just didn't want to hear about it. I saw an article written by the CBC, they didn't even mention the 7.3%. They just went over the 2.3, the 4.8 in store, and that's about it. And so, by the way, there was a GST holiday that skewed results, so we're not going to talk about that. It's just it seems media just is scared of making Ottawa look bad. And to me, that's really problematic, because if you want a solid democracy, you want people to be informed so we can actually make better decisions from a policy perspective.
Do they shy away from that's one perspective. Do they also shy away from it because it's complicated? Like, it's hard to explain.
Well, so like I said, I've been doing this for 25 years. I've actually had like a lot of questions about food inflation. And the discussion, I'd say probably 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, were very intellectual. You know, mm-hmm. they were people were asking questions about in-store food inflation, food service, what's going up, why is that? So we had really good conversations. Nowadays, you'll get the call because they just want to support a certain narrative. I just honestly, some reporters out there, some networks are really responsible and they're trying their best to get that information out. But you can tell that at the upper level, there's some influence for sure. I can feel it. And when you go on X, you can feel that a lot of people are also feeling it. I mean, we're not getting the full story. People actually go on the Statistics Canada website and they can see it. They can see it from themselves.
Well, or they go to podcasts or Reddit or any
the
of these other
professor
things.
Podcasts, right? Exactly.
We're here for you. I mean, you got a perspective. We're going to tell the story as best we can. So
all I'm saying is that until we're honest with ourselves and basically dealing with the problem we have, the food inflation problem is not new. We have to go back to, we've talked about this before. If you look at the data, it really started in 2008 under Stephen Harper. This is not about politics. Yep. This is about economics. So Stephen Harper really started the whole thing. The Trudeau era made things worse with just bad policy decision. And the GST holiday fueled inflation.
Right. Yeah, it was kerosene on the flame, right? It was fueled.
Counter tariffs fueled inflation as well. And here we are. This is when we're able to measure the impact of temporary changes to our fiscal policy. And nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about that.
Reminds me of that David Bowie song, "You're Putting Out the Fire with Gasoline." That's the GST holiday, the way I thought about that one.
Just look at Quebec, yeah. A -5 for 2 months, okay? So right now, the food inflation rate for restaurants is over 10%. Mm-hmm. So a year ago was -5. How come it's 10 now? Mm. There's a +5. Just there. I mean, I can tell you, it really just elevated things without people noticing. But now we're noticing now, and no one's talking about that.
All right. Well, let's move on from that. Let's talk about Team Canada, and not the hockey players, but Team Canada headed to Mexico. Group of people. What is it? 240 businesses, thousands of meetings. Our ag minister, Minister Heath MacDonald, was part of that. It was led by my cousin, Dominic LeBlanc.
Yes.
Now, the output of that seems to have been, I used some AI. We're going to talk about that. I used ChatGPT to try to find out who was on that trip and what came of it in context of agriculture. They seem to have signed, the group, an MOU. Any idea of any benefits to Canadian ag from this association with Mexico?
I can think of a lot of companies which can benefit from a rapprochement with Mexico. I think it's long overdue. Actually, we were talking about this on this pod a year ago while I was in Mexico. Mm-hmm. We need to focus on building this food corridor between Mexico and Canada. And I can think of companies like AGT, companies like, of course, McCain, Olimel, GRI, Nutrien. I mean, lots of Canadian companies can actually benefit from a strong relationship with this forgotten cousin called Mexico. I mean, Mexico, I've always believed, I believe for quite a few months now, that our white knight to save Cosma is Mexico. Because President Claudia Sheinbaum has been masterful in dealing with the Trump administration. They have the best deal in the world. They have the best deal in the world.
She's taken a few hits for sure, though, right? I mean,
oh, absolutely. You know, people are saying, well, they're not. The Trump administration is not threatening Mexico of annexation. Well, wait a second. Historically, America has actually invaded Mexico many times.
They did. You know, when you think about it in the context, you know, they randomly change Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America
without asking anything, and the wall and everything. Come on. So please.
And the latest is basically forcing them to stand down personally for her of her support of Cuba. Right. Yep. So it's part they've been supplying Cuba with oil. They're interesting. They're giving up too, right? They're in a fight.
Oh, absolutely.
They're giving up too in different ways.
I think that seeing Canada and Mexico mm-hmm. work together to generate more business and potentially save CUSMA, I think is a great idea. So I was very happy to learn that there was a huge delegation of businesses mm-hmm. going in Mexico to it should have happened a year ago. But anyways, yeah. Here we are.
I think
it was good news for sure.
One of my favorite things to do on the weekend is have a single bottle, a small bottle of Mexican Coke. So let's talk about Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
How do you like that segue? digging deep for that one.
That's right.
Big announcement. Coca-Cola invests $141 million to expand Brampton facility. They were there with Premier Ford. We'll talk about some other stuff. But that's great news, right? So wonderful absolutely. News investment in the country.
Bravo. Yeah. Bravo. Yeah. And I can hear our listeners saying, well, it's Coke, it's disgusting, it's junk food. And wait a second here. It's processing, okay? Mm-hmm. You may not like Coke. You may think it's junk food. And yes, it's sugary and all that. But we're talking about manufacturing jobs. Mm-hmm. And manufacturing is the centerpiece for any ag industry. Coca-Cola will, if it processes food right here in our backyard, they will look for ingredients in this backyard and so on and so forth. That's how manufacturing is so key. You can have farmers, but if you don't have manufacturing, it's hard to support farmers for anything.
You've been calling for more processing for a while. So great news. Now, sticking with Ontario, Doug Ford also announced that Diageo is going to invest in Ontario, and that will keep Crown Royal on the shelves. Now, I had a professor at university in a negotiation class, Glenn White, and one of his central principles is a BATNA, best alternative to a negotiated agreement. So it does seem that that the premier got something out of Diageo, the local folks.
Did he know? Well, the local folks in
Windsor are not happy. The plant's still closing. He seems to have gotten an investment.
He's not saving jobs.
Well, they're investing in, what are they investing in? They're putting money into the province that I guess they weren't planning to do.
Here's my theory.
Yes?
They're investing money in the province, money that they were already planning and investing.
Mm-hmm.
They just created a memo to save face. Mm. To actually help Doug Ford save face. I think that's basically what happened. It's a marketing plan. Mm. What I saw in the announcement was a marketing plan deployed over several years by Diageo, marketing plan that they were planning to deploy anyways.
Mm. Okay.
That's my theory.
That's your theory, and you're sticking with it.
And by the way, Doug Ford opened up a can of Coke yesterday. Did you see that?
I saw that. He had a Coke Zero, I think.
He did not pour it on the floor.
I thought he was going to mix it with his Crown Royal, actually. That would have been the two things together, a little Coke and Crown Royal.
Exactly. The perfect marriage.
Somebody
the
was missing. Marriage. Maybe my friend Corey Tanike, who's off in BC now, wasn't there beside him and giving some visibility to, hey, put these two things together.
But for people out there thinking it's junk food, it's not just junk food. It's jobs and it's manufacturing and it's more investments and it's know-how being built in Canada and Ontario. It's always good news to see manufacturing expand. So there you go.
So shifting gears quite a bit, Loblaw announced a big connection with OpenAI, ChatGPT, as many would know of it. So I've been playing around with it a little bit. What make of you of this? Good for consumers?
You're the retail guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, what did you think when you actually saw the announcement? I have my own thoughts, but what are your thoughts about that? Because I think this is going to be the big topic of 2026, the integration of AI into food retailing visible to the consumer.
Well, you're absolutely right that AI and the integration, and it is disrupting discovery is what you know, many of us think of it as, like, the way people discover food, the way they discover brands, the way they discover everything is being disrupted by these AI platforms. And, you know, this the ChatGPT stuff, boy, it's got, you know, at its farthest reach, you could walk into a store, hold your camera up, connect it to the app on your phone, and start asking it questions about what it sees on the shelf.
I know.
I mean, we're into very, very new territory. So this is beyond shopper marketing, beyond retail media networks. This is the integration of all. And Loblaws is really first out. In many other industries, is starting to do this integration. I mean, listen,
right.
Eventually these AI platforms who are basically paying NFL salaries for programmers are going to have to make their money in some way, shape, or form. So I think we can definitely look forward to more of this integration. I mean, listen, it's done because millions and millions and millions of people in Canada are using the platforms, whether it's Gemini and Google, ChatGPT.
My first thought when I heard the news, why wouldn't Loblaw do it on its own? I mean, Loblaw, you know this. I mean, Loblaw is known to do everything on its own. It's not like Sobeys is known to partner. I mean, Gaytik is probably the only partnership that I can think of that forced Loblaw to go out. So why would they actually partner with OpenAI? And we're talking about data here. And my other question to you, my guru, retail guru friend, how do you think consumers will react to the fact that Loblaw can actually learn more about you and I through AI to enhance our grocery experience, but perhaps at the same time, use AI against us? The ghost in the machine.
You set me up here. I would say retailers in general will turn to a platform like ChatGPT, just like they turn to a platform like Google for search, because the platform, the Google, whatever, have become the destination for consumers. So retailers will follow where consumers go. It's not like Loblaw or anybody else can build ChatGPT or build these platforms. That's where you want to go, where consumers are, basically. It's not like,
is overwhelming too. I mean,
well, it's one of
you need a lot of infrastructure. We're seeing it right now. I mean, you have to invest a lot of money, and that's money that probably Loblaw wasn't willing to invest.
Well, or capable. I mean, in Amazon's latest reporting on their financials, their CapEx for 2026 is $200 billion. $200 billion of CapEx, and most of that is going to bits, not bytes. They are building these massive, massive facilities for processing. Like $200 billion, that's a 1 year spend of CapEx. It's actually going to turn their revenues to neutral, their cash flow revenues to neutral. But they're doing it to catch up, actually, to demand. The demand is just, this is a real phenomenon.
Here's another question for you, my retail guru friend.
Yeah.
Do you think other grocers are doing it, but they're not telling? Why would you make an announcement? Like, really?
Well, you can have, you could set up your site in a way that ChatGPT can't get into it, right? Mm. You can block the robots from getting into your site. LinkedIn, for example, you can't get into LinkedIn. I can't go search for people in LinkedIn, for example.
Right.
So I think it's a resource and it's a time. In terms of other grocers, we're going to have some.
But wouldn't you think that people would feel threatened or would be concerned about, you know, surge pricing? Those are the terms that we're hearing: dynamic pricing. Mm-hmm. And do you think that there was this experiment in the U.S. where people were ordering the same thing at the same time?
Instacart,
and got different prices because of algorithms. Do you think that people are concerned about that?
Well, let me address your point about data and privacy. I mean, many retailers have loyalty programs that tell way more data anyway about what people are doing down to what they're buying anyway. And consumers can opt into that, and many, many do. They're very, very popular. You go to shopping at a Costco, they know exactly what you've bought and when.
Oh, yeah.
They know everything. So incrementally, it's not a whole lot more data.
Most people don't mind.
Well, if they mind, they can opt out of the program. You know, these loyalty programs aren't mandatory. There's great benefits, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're not mandatory to shop there. Well, I guess they kind of are in Costco. You need a membership. It is mandatory.
Exactly.
So I take that back. I do think that, there is always the capability of, you know, you want to be using this for good, not evil. Will it be used for dynamic pricing? Will they learn even more? Listen, these big companies know a lot about us through their loyalty programs. This is just another enabler where people are discovering.
My take. First of all, I think it's great. However, there is a blind spot from a moral contract perspective. I don't think Haynes are willing to see, you know, two people buying a dozen of eggs at a different price from the same store at the same time. That's all I'm saying. I think that grocers will have to be extremely careful as they empower the consumers with better grocery experience with AI. They're really going to have to be careful because what I've seen so far are consumers really feeling uneasy about seeing grocers using AI, because they may actually, many consumers out there feel that grocers may use AI against them to increase profits. And there is that context that I think that grocers need to appreciate.
Moving on, let's talk about cocoa. So I was surprised to see this headline in that cocoa is backing up in the produce at the farm gate, and that because my impression, maybe I was just thinking of coffee, the chocolate prices were going up, 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 and up. We've talked about that before, but it seems to be
since November.
It seems to be, I don't know if it's a bumper harvest or is the not a climate change, like it's coming down. So would you anticipate then us paying a little bit less for our Halloween chocolates and Christmas chocolate this year?
So, if you were to have asked me about Easter, forget it. Easter chocolate is already made. And sure. So it's been a while already. So, but I do see, probably Halloween, we could actually see some good deals. If prices remain low, I mean, we're down to about $3,300 US a metric ton, which is really interesting. I mean, the record is almost 11,000 or almost 12,000. So we're talking about a quarter of the record high of last year. So very good news for chocolate lovers for sure. And I'm not sure if you actually saw the price of coffee, but coffee is also going down. It's down to $2.64 a pound US now. Brazil and Vietnam, they're ramping up their production. So again, for coffee lovers, and obviously with Robert Carter joining us, I'm going to talk to him. Talk to him about prospects of seeing cheaper coffee down the road. So it's all good news. And don't forget, I mean, coffee at some point was at $4.50, I think, a pound. So we're talking about so it hasn't been at the price we're seeing right now since November 2024. So good news for coffee lovers. Retail, I'm not expecting prices to drop like right now, but it could actually, if we could actually end up seeing cheaper prices in the summer.
Right. I was going to say about 6 months, right? It takes a bit of time for that to flow through. Flow through to the shelves a little faster when you're buying your coffee at Tim Hortons and Starbucks.
Exactly.
Speaking of Tim Hortons, there's another segue for you.
Yeah.
Roll Up the Rim is back. So
forever.
Forever, apparently. Forever and ever. As you know, I have a fondness for that,
of course,
that program.
You're married to that. Well, I mean, you're part of the creation process. Right?
I was there when the program was created at the cup supplier.
40 years ago.
Many, many years ago. And
because you're 150 years old.
I was only 12 at the time. So the announcement was that Tim Hortons is, they dabbled, COVID infused or induced where they went digital, and they kept that for a few years. Obviously, yep. I guess a little easier, but it's not very fun, I don't think. So now they're getting back into the physicality with you get to roll up the rim again. Which I think is a pile of fun, and good for them. I think it's a good move. You?
It's a good move. Yeah, they don't want boomers to die.
Hey, come on! There's a lot of research out that the kids these days they're getting off their phones, getting off social media. I mean, my God, the scourge of online gambling ads.
Yeah,
alone will force you off your mobile device. And hey,
I think Tim Hortons should actually set up a bunch of TVs so people can gamble in their restaurants for a while. They'll get more kids in there. I mean, every time I go to Tim Hortons, I'm 55 and I'm young. I think they're satisfying a base there, but
I think you said the magic word. You're in there. The rest of them are just driving through or having it delivered at home. That's
true.
You're just not seeing them.
That's true.
right?
But I do know that this campaign is incredibly successful.
Let's move on. A couple of follow-ups from last week. We talked about this XTM brewing scandal of restaurant tips being absconded or some kind of bad business. The Bank of Canada has now stepped in and has shut down they've asked XTM to halt payment activities. So, this is a thing. This could be a bigger thing than, I don't know if it's bigger than we thought, but the Bank of Canada is now involved, which you don't hear very often. So,
why would a central bank get involved with this?
Well, I guess they own the rails to which money crosses across, right? So I think so my understanding is, I was a little surprised too. Why is the Bank of Canada, who usually prints notes, but they own payment systems at the highest level.
Right. Okay.
So I think that this, as a payment system transferring money, they had to step in, and I guess they both authorize and
remind our listeners what the story is about, by the way.
Well, the story is that many restaurants, particularly in British Columbia, apparently it was focused there, that they would upload their tips to XTM, and the tips would be administered in some way more efficiently.
Redistributed.
Yeah. It was a tip management thing. It was a program built to make it easier for restaurants to manage tips and
where
they went. Apparently, they went into a dark hole.
And we're talking millions of dollars.
Allegedly, yeah. There's some stuff going on here. Clearly, the Bank of Canada thinks there's something there. So we'll continue to follow up on that story. Like, the restaurants need any more hassle. Speaking of which, restaurant numbers put out by the Restaurants Canada organization. What is it? 44% of restaurants are either not making money or making no money.
Yeah,
that's up from 18% pre-COVID.
Can you imagine operating a restaurant making no money? I mean, it's so much hard work.
You know, I try to support restaurants when I can. You and I always go out and eat a good meal when you're in town, when we're in town together. I did that for Valentine's Day, and
did you go out on Valentine's Day?
We go out the week before Valentine's Day.
We went out on February 13th on a Friday.
And
Michael, it was a nice restaurant. The place was half empty.
Really?
On a Friday night. I was surprised. Now, probably on the 14th, it was full, but there was a Valentine's Day like menu, you know, for I think $120, $30. You actually had the whole meal, and it was actually very good. It was great. It was at Café Lunette in Halifax, one of our favorite restaurants. And but the place was half full. Yeah.
Maybe that's everybody waiting to the next day.
So maybe. Who knows?
You see that in a sale sometimes. Everybody holds off the night before because they're going out on the 14th. Maybe it
but
distorts
as I was
the
dating,
market.
As I was dating my wife, I saw a few. You can tell if you're witnessing a first date, can't you?
It's true.
It's awkward. And, and I was looking around, and there were a few first dates.
I like to sit beside him, and it's good to good. To
hey, how you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing? How's it going? Hey, guys, how's it going? See a future together?
Yeah, exactly.
I asked my wife to marry me in a restaurant, actually. So restaurants are
you
big.
You did?
Part. I did.
Did you do knee thing and everything?
I did not do the knee thing.
And she said yes.
And surprisingly, she said
bastard.
Bastard. But you know, everybody in the restaurant, there wasn't a lot of people. It was a place we went to. Quite often, and everybody, they watched, and they're like,
"So, which Tim Hortons was that?"
Come on, I'm a Starbucks guy.
If you propose to Tim Hortons, I gotta tell you, it's, I don't think it's a good signal to send to your future wife.
Well, you're nothing but social anyway, I guess.
There were some weddings at Tim Hortons, but I suspect that because you worked there, you met there, whatever.
Whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes for people to meet each other.
Exactly.
A couple last things. Looks like the U.S. agricultural lobby groups are big on CUSMA. So facts being stubborn things.
Oh, yeah.
They all got together and they said, listen, this CUSMA has been good for us. So that's USMCA, as they would say.
Excuse me, Mr. President.
Excuse me,
Mr. President.
We've made money from this and it's good for us.
Yes.
So I just wanted to call that out. Thanks to the U.S. agricultural lobby. About 50 of them got together.
I wasn't surprised. I mean, it's a deal that works. But when you have a president and administration that believes that globalization is a failed policy, I mean, it's hard to – to argue with a regime like that. But but ag groups are absolutely right to actually be very vocal about it right now. And so my guess is that perhaps you'll start seeing states working with provinces and with Ottawa. And it's great. I mean, that's why the trip to Mexico was great. I think that there's going to be more and more people meeting and talking. And and while President Trump is posturing, I mean, it's really getting a little annoying, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think people just wanted to go down, come down to business. And I mean, the Gordie Howe incident to me just made the president look really stupid. I mean, he just believed in the owner of the Ambassador Bridge and just went at it and with no facts. And everything that he said about the Gordie Howe Bridge was wrong.
Well, I mean, you know, it's called sundowning. You can look that up on the internet.
Sundowning, yeah.
Later in the evening, he's sundowning, I think, when some of these things happen. Let's talk about, last but not least, boneless chicken wings. I was shocked at this. So someone went into a restaurant, ordered chicken wings that were marked as boneless chicken wings.
Yep.
And was shocked they were not actually chicken wings. They were chicken breast masquerading as boneless chicken wings, and sued, and he lost. I don't get this at all. Like, when I want, I think boneless chicken wings are kind of like an abomination to begin with, but at least they should be made out of chicken wings.
Yeah, it's like ordering mussels without the shells.
Well, it's like, but it's like ordering mussels and getting, you know, snails or something. Like, it's not even the same thing.
Yeah, it's not even the same thing.
So anyway, I'm here to put my fist down and say boneless chicken wings should be made out of chicken wings. And by the way, boneless chicken wings are an abomination and shouldn't exist at all.
Is there a polite way to say that I absolutely do not care? Like, I literally do not care. Wings.
Yeah, I think you might say that you're indifferent, perhaps.
Indifferent, yes.
Indifferent,
absolutely.
There you go.
Yes.
Which may mean you like have no opinion one way, shape, or another. But
I have zero opinion, but I appreciate yours.
All right. Well, that's why the podcast works. There you go. All right. Well, that's a wrap on this show. We'll be back next week, as I said, with a regular scheduled program. Robert Carter will be joining us. We've got lots of great guests coming up for the rest of the season. I'm Michael LeBlanc, media entrepreneur, and you are?
I'm the food professor, Sylvain Charlebois.
Safe travels, everybody.
Take care.